Bigfoot on Campus takes place between Turncoat and Changes. The campus police officer folded his hands and stared at me from across the table. "Coffee? What flavor is it?" I asked. He was in his 40s, a big, solid man with bags under his calm, wary eyes, and his name tag read Dean. "It's coffee-flavored coffee. No mocha? Fuck mocha." "Thank God," I said. "Black." Officer Dean gave me hot black coffee in a paper cup, and I sipped at it gratefully. I was almost done shivering. It just came in intermittent bursts now. The old wool blanket Dean had given me was more gesture than cure. "Am I under arrest?" I asked him. Officer Dean moved his shoulders in what could have been a shrug. "That's what we're going to talk about." "Uh-huh," I said. "Maybe," he said in a slow rural drawl, "you could explain to me why I found you in the middle of an orgy." "Well," I said, "if you're going to be in an orgy, the middle is the best spot, isn't it?" He made a thoughtful sound. "Maybe you could explain why there was a car on the fourth floor of the dorm." "Classic college prank," I said. He grunted. "Usually when that happens, it hasn't made big holes in the exterior wall." "Someone was avoiding the cliché?" I asked. He looked at me for a moment and said, "What about all the blood?" "There were no injuries, were there?" "No," he said. "Then who cares? Some film student probably watched Carrie too many times." Officer Dean tapped his pencil's eraser on the tabletop. It was the most agitated thing I'd seen him do. 6 separate calls in the past 3 hours with a Bigfoot sighting on campus. Bigfoot. What do you know about that?" "Well, kids these days, with their internets and their video games and their iPods, who knows what they thought they saw?" Officer Dean put down his pencil. He looked at me and said calmly, "My job is to protect a bunch of kids with access to every means of self-destruction known to man, from not only the criminal element, but themselves. I got chemistry students who can make their own meth, ecstasy, and LSD. I've got ROTC kids with access to automatic weapons and explosives. I got enough alcohol going through here on a weekly basis to float a battleship. I got a thriving trade in recreational drugs. I got lives to protect." "Sounds tiring." "About to get tired of you," he said. "Start giving it to me straight." "Or you'll arrest me?" I asked. "No," Dean said. "I bounce your face off my knuckles for a while. Then I ask again."
"Isn't that unprofessional conduct?"
"Fuck conduct," Dean said. "I got kids to look after." I sipped the coffee some more. Now that the shivers had begun to subside, I finally felt the knotted muscles in my belly begin to relax. I slowly settled back into my chair. Dean hadn't blustered or tried to intimidate me in any way. He wasn't trying to scare me into talking. He was just telling me how it was going to be, and he drank his coffee old school. I kind of liked the guy.
"You aren't going to believe me," I said.
"I don't much," he said. "Try me." "Okay," I said. "My name is Harry Dresden. I'm a professional wizard." Officer Dean pursed his lips. Then he leaned forward slightly and listened. The client wanted me to meet him at a site in the Ouachita Mountains in eastern Oklahoma. Looking at them, you might not realize they were mountains. They were so old. They've had millions of years of wear and tear on them, and they've been ground down to nubs. The site used to be on an Indian reservation, but they don't call them reservations anymore. They're tribal statistical areas now. I showed my letter and my ID to a guy in a pickup who just happened to pull up next to me for a friendly chat at a lonely stop sign on a winding back road. I don't know what the tribe called his office, but I recognized a guardian when I saw one. He read the letter and waved me through in an even friendlier manner than he had used when he approached me. It's nice to be welcomed somewhere once in a while. I parked at the spot indicated on the map and hiked a good mile and a half into the hills, taking a heavy backpack with me. I found a pleasant spot to set up camp.
The mid-October weather was crisp, but I had a good sleeping bag and would be comfortable as long as it didn't start raining. I dug a fire pit and ringed it in stones, built a modest fire out of fallen limbs, and laid out my sleeping bag on a foam camp pad. By the time it got dark, I was well into preparing the dinner I'd brought with me. The scent of foil-wrapped potatoes baking in coals blended with that of the steaks I had spitted and roasting over the fire. Can I cook a camp meal or what? Bigfoot showed up half an hour after sunset. 1 minute I was alone, the next he simply stepped into view. He was huge. Not huge like a big person, but huge like a horse, with that same sense of raw animal power and mass. He was 9 feet tall at least, and probably tipped the scales at well over 600 pounds. His powerful, wide-shouldered body was covered in long, dark brown hair. Even though he stood in plain sight in my firelight, I could barely see the buckskin bag he had slung over one shoulder and across his chest. The hair was so long. "Strength of a river in his shoulders," I said. "You're welcome at my fire." "Wizard Dresden," River Shoulders rumbled. "It is good to see you." He took a couple of long steps and hunkered down opposite the fire from me. "Man, that smells good." "Darn right it does," I said. I proceeded with the preparations in companionable silence while River Shoulders stared thoughtfully at the fire. I'd set up my camp this way for a reason. It made me the host and River Shoulders my guest. It meant I was obliged to provide food and drink, and he was obliged to behave with decorum. Guest and host relationships are damn near laws of physics in the supernatural world. They almost never get violated, and when they do, it's a big deal. Both of us felt a lot more comfortable around one another this way. Okay, maybe it did a wee bit more to make me feel comfortable than it did River Shoulders, but he was a repeat customer. I liked him, and I figured he probably didn't get treated to a decent steak all that often. We ate the meal in an almost ritualistic silence, too, other than River making some appreciative noises as he chewed. I popped open a couple of bottles of McAnally's Pale, my favorite brew by a veritable genius of hops back in Chicago. River liked it so much he gave me an inquisitive glance when his bottle was empty, so I emptied mine and produced two more. After that, I filled a pipe with expensive tobacco, lit it, took a few puffs, and passed it to him. He nodded and took it. We smoked and finished our beers. By then, the fire had died down to glowing embers. "Thank you for coming," River Shoulders rumbled. "Again, I come to seek your help on behalf of my son."
"Third time you've come to me," I said.
"Yes." He rummaged in his pouch and produced a small, heavy object. He flicked it to me. I caught it and squinted at it in the dim light. It was a gold nugget about as big as a ping-pong ball. I nodded and tossed it back to him. River Shoulders' brows lowered into a frown. You have to understand, a frown on a mug like his looked indistinguishable from scowling fury. It turned his eyes into shadowed caves, with nothing but a faint gleam showing from far back in them. It made his jaw muscles bunch and swell into knots the size of tennis balls on the sides of his face.